You are listening to Ukraine 242. We bring you interview subjects from all walks of life in wartime in Ukraine. Thanks to all our listeners around the world. Here is your host, Anne Levin.
Welcome to Ukraine 242, a weekly show featuring experts on the ground in Ukraine and from around the world, covering myriad issues caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. I am Anne Levin, your host and producer from WOMR in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Our guest is Ekaterina Malagina, a digitalization consultant and equipment coordinator for SUCHO, Saving Ukrainian Cultural Heritage Online. SUCHO launched on March 1st, 2022, and is a global grassroots initiative of over 1,500 volunteers around the world. The mission is to support the preservation through digitalization of Ukrainian cultural materials. Ekaterina Malagina, welcome to Ukraine 242.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
You are digitalization consultant and equipment coordinator for SUCHO. Tell us about SUCHO.
SUCHO is a global grassroots initiative of more than 1,500 volunteers all over the world. And our mission or our task is to support the digital preservation of Ukrainian cultural heritage. We are mostly librarians, archivists, humanities researchers, technologists. Myself, I'm a public historian and museum worker. So basically, we all are people who are dealing with heritage and culture and its digital preservation. We started with websites, archiving, and currently we support Ukrainian museums, libraries, archives with digitization training, but also with equipment.
We've talked to people about preserving, I don't even know, how would you refer to it, material works of art and...
Tangible, I'd say.
Right. Okay. Tangible and buildings. But you are all about the digital archives and preserving those. To a lot of us, it would seem like if it's a website or a digital library, it would just be safe. Can you describe why these things need to be protected?
Right. So that's a very good question. You know, when you're so into your bubble, you forget about such things, but I'll try to explain. I think that's an idea that everything that lands in the internet never disappears, but it's basically a wrong idea because all digital things are stored on physical servers. And in a war, virtual destruction can happen to things like bombing, shelling, looting, power blackouts, cyber attacks, internet outages, traffic rerouting, and so on. And also the websites can be crawled and archived passively. Also, we forget sometimes that the internet is basically made of people. So the websites are maintained by webmasters. For example, if we have a webmaster that is currently fighting on the front, sometimes there is no other person who can overtake this. Or, you know, it's system administrators. They're also people. And basically everything that we have on the internet is somewhere on some physical server. And if it's destroyed, it's lost.
Can you tell us about some things that have been destroyed and have been lost?
Yes, sure. In Ukraine, they have around 670 institutions in Ukraine that have been damaged since the beginning of invasion. And some institutions have been destroyed completely, like in Mariupol or other cities. Just in April, we had this terrible news about a museum in Kupiansk who has been completely destroyed. Or just last week, we've seen these terrible pictures of, you know, churches in Odessa, and the historical part of Odessa has been very damaged. Yes, so almost every day we see such terrible news about physical destructions of building, but also digital infrastructure, also servers. For example, I've been working a lot with the state archives of Kharkiv region. The archive has been badly damaged in the beginning of the invasion last year. And, you know, if the server is damaged, so basically every digital document that they have been lost. So it's very important here to also provide some additional storage. So at least we could evacuate not only tangible objects, but also this digital or so to say intangible heritage as well.
What kind of things are in digital form?
What kinds of cultural heritage are in digital form, right?
Correct. Yes. Thank you.
We have a lot of museums that have digital inventories. So if it's done in digital form, it can be easily be lost. So we need to make sure that the servers where the information is are in a safe place or kind of backed up somewhere else, also in Europe or in the United States as well. On the same page, we have, for example, archives digitizing their collections and, you know, all this documents like data or files, they also can be lost. For example, libraries, because there are a huge amount of libraries have already lost very rare books and now they have these PDFs and they also have to be stored somewhere. And of course, as you know, as Sutro also working on helping the Ukrainian cultural institutions with digitizing photos and documentation of war damages all stored in the same space. So it's also part of our work. For example, if database, for example, is in paper, it's very, very fragile. And when you have this paper collection, it's just very, very hot. It will take months just to combine it in some form and boxes and so on. And, you know, when we convert this object in digital form and save it on some database, cloud services, or hard drives for just application, but also if something happens with the object, we know how it looks so we can restore it. So that's why digital inventory is also that important.
It's interesting when you think about digital preservation, it seems like something that's going to constantly be compounded and generate more and more need in itself.
Yes, indeed. Digitization is a very, very long process that can probably take years and years and probably even decades. So it's very important to start this. For example, in Germany, it's pretty common that the library has a digital catalog where you find all the books. You can also loan a book online, but it's not that common for other countries because it costs money. It costs a lot of efforts to organize such things. So I've been helping in Ukraine museum inventories. For example, how museums organize their informations. Do they keep their data in Excel sheets or in special databases? Because we still unfortunately have this terrible issue because some, for example, Ukrainian museums have been working with Russian software that just stopped working after the beginning of the invasion. And currently we have to get this information out of the system and transfer it to some safe space where it could be developed further. Also, if you need to evacuate your museum, when you have the digital database, you can just move it, you know, from one computer to another or from one hard drive to another on some cloud storage. But regional museums probably have just 20% of their collection digitized, which has been a huge challenge during the last year and a half. And also, you know, there's another thing. Well, museums now have overtaken this role of documentation of this current war, documenting what's going on, for example, in the occupied territories or, you know, in some filtration camps and so on. So our job is also to help people to organize their information so it can be kept for years and years for future researchers.
What specifically do you do if a museum or a church or a town gets bombed, gets destroyed? What do you then do?
We always try to work earlier than it happens. But Museum in Kupiansk in Oblast Kharkiv in the east of Ukraine has just been destroyed on the 25th of April. And unfortunately, two employees, including museum's director, died during this bombing. So currently, museum workers are trying to find some objects from, you know, from the building that is collapsed. And they try to document it all. For example, we found this object. It's in this state. And for example, it requires restoration or, you know, further conservation measures. So our job is basically to provide this equipment. And just last week, I've been in a very intensive contact again with the museum, and we bought a laptop, a scanner and a printer, and also some hard drives, because a lot of people are waiting to work on just one laptop because five other computers have been destroyed during bombing or on the occupied areas. Some have been robbed on their equipment, and basically museums and archives and libraries have to document it all by writing with their own hands. And it takes a huge amount of time, and it's also very fragile. So yeah, our task here to get equipment and support, for example, this museum in Kupiansk, so they can document what's happened with them.
This sounds like an absolutely massive undertaking, and it sounds like there are a few levels of it. On one hand, you're wanting to protect, copy, and store safely the archives, and you're also documenting that process and the destruction and what Russia is doing, what they've destroyed. How in the world are you able to organize this?
I would say we are more in supporting role, helping hands. We just give tools, and for the most part, all the work on documenting is done by our colleagues in Ukraine. And our job is to support them, to provide them with storage, to provide them with tools, to provide them training from Europe and also from North America. Because we started with digital archiving, and we try to also understand what's been lost and where the help is still needed and what can we do. Our work is basically to preserve things in digital. So, you know, we are all dispersed all over the world, all over the Sutro. And then we support this museum digitizing its collection.
Extraordinary. How much physical space is Sutro needing at this point?
Currently, we have it around 50 terabytes of just web archives, which is a huge, huge number, and it's still raising every day. I guess currently we have it around 2 terabytes of data also. So I'd say altogether it's around 55 terabytes, I guess.
Do you just have one huge main database that branches off into all sorts of directions?
We have multiple databases. And just a few months ago, we also started sub project where we provide Ukrainian institutions also with Nextcloud storage, which is based also in a Sabic company in Amsterdam, where Ukrainian institutions can just kind of use this as very normal cloud storage. And I guess it's very popular. We have more than 50 institutions signed up for it. Of course, it's free of charge. And we're very happy that our partners here in Europe are supporting us with this task.
So interesting. How are you able to source this equipment, the photography equipment, computers, these huge hard drives, everything that people need, as you were saying, you know, there were five people working on one laptop. How are you getting that equipment?
Sutro is basically working only with donations. We do not receive any financial help from government and so on. It's all donations, and we buy equipment. And it's me who discovered this method where you use internet commerce and you find some people like Amazon in Ukraine. And then just in 2 or 3 days, it's already on the spot. And some equipment, for example, like scanners that are hard to buy in Ukraine. And then we buy them for the most part in Germany and also send them over to Lviv, where they get distributed with our colleagues. And it has been working very well. It helps us a lot in a sense, because we do not only buy, you know, computers and laptops. Sometimes we understand, for example, I've been working with the Kherson library, and sometimes we understand that if there are no windows in the library building, it's no use to buy laptops or scanners. You basically just need to close these places so the books are in a safe space, right? So, for example, we just some special foil to close these areas that have been destroyed. And, you know, they're just delivered within 3 to 4 days. The post is incredibly good in Ukraine, sometimes even faster than something that we have in Germany.
Чий будинок згорів,
стрілка метро глибша за більшість морів. Ліхтарик у кишені, підземки переповнене нутро. Господь із тобою ночує на станції метро.
You are listening to Ukraine 242. Thank you for tuning in. I am Anne Levine from WOMR in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Our guest, Ekaterina Maligina, is a Russian-Ukrainian native who lives and works in Berlin, Germany. She is currently a consultant for Sucho, Saving Ukrainian Cultural Heritage Online. The mission is to support the preservation through digitalization of Ukrainian cultural materials, including archives, websites, libraries, publications, catalogs, and more. Sucho launched on March 1st, 2022, and is a global grassroots initiative of over 1,500 volunteers around the world. From what I understand, Sucho was created a day or two after the full-scale invasion started at Tufts University and Stanford. Where is Sucho? Does the center exist online? Is it a digital space or is there a center?
We do not have any office. We do not have any address. So it's all started, I guess, with Anna Kias. She works in Tufts University in Boston, in Massachusetts. And also Sebastian Lestorovich, who is my colleague. He's also based in Germany now. And we have one more colleague, who is Queen Dombrovsky, and she's from Stanford University. And then just many, many volunteers to support Ukraine heritage. And currently, we are in Europe. We are based under OPA Collective Europe that help us to manage all the donations we receive. And also we have a bank account that we use for our operations. So we are very, very international and we are not geographically based somewhere. It's open for everyone and everyone can be a volunteer. So yeah.
How many volunteers are working for Sucho right now?
For the most part, we have 1,500 volunteers all over the world.
That just is mind-blowing. It sounds almost impossible to organize.
In the beginning, we had a huge Google Sheet where it was like 1,000 people working at one point, which is just, you know, very hard. But yeah, you know, we open different chats and communicate. We have some people who help, for example, with translation. We have some people who are mentors, for example, and they help institutions in Ukraine. They support them. We may have, you know, very direct requests, for example, how can we do this and that? And also we have, for example, equipment group. I'm working in the equipment group where we are contacting the institutions directly in Ukraine and offer them help, or they reach out to us and we begin our work together. There's different groups.
Let's say I want to volunteer. What would you assign me to do?
Different things to collaborate. For example, when you come to us and you say, oh, you know, I'm very interested in memes. And we say, we have a meme gallery where we collect all the memes about Russian invasion. And you can, for example, you find some funny meme on the internet and you just download it. Ideal if you speak Ukrainian or understand Ukrainian or at least Cyrillic alphabet or Russian as well. And then kind of you can translate as well. And you write, and then it's published on Meme Gallery.
So if I was going to volunteer gathering things for the Meme Gallery, is this just crawling around Twitter or X or whatever it is today, Facebook and YouTube and collecting these things?
Right. So yeah, we do have, for example, there are some Telegram channels. There's also some Ukrainian meme Telegram channels. And you can just search there. You can search them on Twitter, on Facebook, basically in any social media. this Russian invasion is probably the most documented war that ever happened. And memes are also a huge part of history. Like myself, I'm a very big fan of one news channel that is called Perepichka. And every time they share news, they make a kind of fun story about this.
And you said that's called Perepichka?
Perepichka, exactly. Perepichka news.
And what does that mean?
It's a name of bread.
Fascinating. In my daily life, memes seem just this sort of amusing thing. It doesn't seem like it would be important. Why are they important?
It combines so many cultural references and sometimes so many historical references. For example, myself in Germany, like I understand German humor pretty well. But if I go to New York, there's some specific local jokes that probably I wouldn't understand. I know memes can sound a bit weird, but I guess also, you know, something that helps people to continue their work in this terrible, terrible conditions. And that's why meme collection is so important now. And you know, memes that are collected are also huge, intangible part of the culture or of the communication of this war. And they help us understand how people think in these terrible conditions. For example, probably doesn't sound so funny when I just say it, but you know, there's a level of English of Zelensky, like 2020, it's B1, 2022, it's like B2, and 2023, it's F16.
To our listeners who are interested in perhaps volunteering or checking out Sucho, donating, where should they go? What should they do?
The easiest way is just to open our website, which is sucho.org, where you will find any information about our work, for example, about our archiving task, about digitization equipment and training. You can also check out our Ukrainian Cultural Heritage Gallery and also Wartime in War. And tap donate. You can find, and these donations are tax deductible. So please just open our webpage and you'll find us in the tab donate. And you'll find here our email address. You can also contact us. And you can, of course, also contribute with your time, with your skills, or with basically anything. We are open to any kind of help. You know, we're not an institution. We are just initiatives. So we are all working on different institutions. Some have tasks, this museum, some are helping to deliver equipment from, I don't know, from Poland to Ukraine. So amount of tasks is just incredible. So just please check out our website and I'm sure you'll find something for you.
Ekaterina Malagina, what did you do prior to joining Sucho?
I have been working in some institutions, like in museums for the most part. I also have been working in the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum for some time in the past. And my job is to create projects that are based on history and that engage society into interacting with this history. And when the war started, I've been looking for ways to support Ukraine with something that I have for our community service here in Germany to support refugees from Ukraine. I guess at the beginning, it was very hard to think of culture when you see what's going on in this world, when you see a huge amount of people that flee from this terrible invasion. But then I guess I slowly come to this idea that we also have to do something with heritage as well. From very, very first days, it's been a huge amount of initiatives. For example, have been collecting packaging material, that have been collecting some OSB plates that you cover your windows with so they don't get damaged, for example, during the bombing and so on. And then I've been working also in a project funded by the Ministry of Culture here in Germany, supporting physical storage of culture. But then I had this possibility to also be more involved in this digital preservation. I was very happy about this. So then I joined Sucho last year.
One last question. At the end of every show, we play a song. What song would you like us to use?
I don't know. I guess some song that really comes to my mind now and that I have been listening a lot, Song Metro, written by Jadan and Sobaki, which means dogs. It's a song about the subway in the city of Kharkiv. It's basically a bomb shelter for the whole city. And I guess it's a song which really brings me to tears probably every time when I hear it. So I would definitely offer this song.
Ekaterina Maligina, thank you so much for taking all this time and sharing the information about Sucho.
Thank you very much for having me. So it's been a great pleasure.
Best of wishes to you. Best of luck on all of this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Пацани з Салтівки, чий будинок згорів. Гілка метро глибша за більшість морів. Ліхтарик у кишені, підземки переповнене нутро. Господь із тобою ночує на станції метро. Дівчинка з ліцею, що прибилася з нових домів. Ніхто не зумів тобі сказати, і я теж не зумів. Ніхто не пояснив, чому вигорає цей квартал. Але серце твоє дитяче, міцніше за метал. Злі і веселі діти харківських підвалів. Діти, що живуть у глибинах метрополітену. Світ, який усе це бачив, посивів і постарів. Але любов – це робота, і нам робити цю роботу щоденну. Хай місто накриє крилом. Місто заступиться, місто поділиться теплом. Налє тобі з термосу гарячого чаю.
Metro by Jadan and Dogs. Thank you to our guest Ekaterina Maligina. Saving Ukrainian cultural heritage online. Sucho welcomes participation. To learn more, go to sucho.org. That's sucho.org. sucho.org. I am Anne Levine, the host and producer of Ukraine 242 from WOMR in Provincetown. Editing, Ursula Rudenberg. Recording, Michael Levine. To see pictures of our guests and to access our library of our previous shows, go to ukraine242.com. Thank you for joining us. Until next week on Ukraine 242.
Харківських підвалів.